Good evening. You are listening to KKRN Bella Vista, 88.5 FM in Round Mountain. Next up is Intermountain Classics, our weekly classical music program featuring a selection of the world's most beautiful music. Here is our cultural calendar, which brings you highlights of upcoming concerts, plays, and stage productions taking place in the Redding and Shasta County area. If you would like your event listed on this program, please send your event announcement with all pertinent details to imclassics@kkrn.org. That's imclassics@kkrn.org. Shasta Symphony Orchestra offers its winter concert on Friday, March 1st at 7 p.m. Featured will be Pictures at an Exhibition by Mussorgsky, the Overture in G Minor by Bruckner, and the Mozart G Major Violin Concerto featuring student violinist John Mesh. The concert takes place at the Shasta College Theater. Tickets are available online at shastacollege.edu or at the door. Welcome to Intermountain Classics, brought to you each week by KKRN 88.5 FM in Round Mountain. I'm your host, Tom Diskin. Intermountain Classics is a local program featuring local artists and musicians with live broadcasts and interviews, as well as fine recorded music and commentary. Intermountain Classics comes to you twice a week, Saturdays from 5 to 7 p.m., and Thursdays from 8:30 to 10:30 p.m. Past programs are also available on our website. Go to kkrn.org, click on Shows, then scroll down to Intermountain Classics. The program files can be downloaded in one-hour segments. And remember, you can always request your favorite music or comment on the show by emailing me at imclassics@kkrn.org. So stay tuned for your favorite classical music right here on KKRN. Tonight's program features an interview with the conductor and musical director of our very own Shasta Symphony, and joining him will be student violinist John Mesh, soloist in the Mozart G Major Violin Concerto in the upcoming winter concert next Friday, March 1st. Details for the concert follow in the first hour of our program tonight. Following the interview will be a performance of one of the works featured on the concert, Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition. During the second hour tonight, you will hear a divertimento by Brazilian composer Edino Krieger and the Symphony No. 1 by Gounod. Intermountain Classics will then leave you with a taste of what you will enjoy in the Shasta Symphony concert with a performance of Bruckner's delightful Overture in G Minor. Stay tuned for a great evening of classical music right here on KKRN. And remember, more detailed information on the works featured in tonight's program can be found in the program notes in the Intermountain Classics section of the KKRN.org website. We begin our program with a special interview with the conductor and musical director of the Shasta Symphony Orchestra, Dr. Duane Corbin, and violin soloist John Mesh.
This coming Friday, March 1st, the Shasta Symphony Orchestra is performing its winter concert. Featured in the concert will be Pictures at an Exhibition by Mussorgsky, the Overture in G Minor by Bruckner, and the Mozart G Major Violin Concerto featuring student violinist John Mesh. This evening, we are privileged to have two special guests on Intermountain Classics, Dr. Duane Corbin and violin soloist John Mesh. Dr. Corbin is the conductor of the Shasta Symphony Orchestra, a cooperative ensemble between Simpson University and Shasta College. He is associate professor of instrumental music at Simpson, responsible for the percussion ensemble, conducting courses, applied percussion, and world music. Dr. Corbin earned a doctorate of music arts in conducting from the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music, a Master of Music in Percussion Performance from Central Washington University, and a Bachelor of Music Education from Wheaton College. Welcome to Intermountain Classics, Dr. Corbin and John.
Well, thanks for having us, Tom.
Thank you. Dr. Corbin, you have quite an impressive musical history and background. Can you tell us how your musical career evolved and took you to so many different places?
Sure. I just fell in love with music as a kid, like most musicians, like I'm sure you did as well, and grew up playing in youth symphony, in the school band, jazz bands, church groups, all sorts of different things. And I actually was interested in music enough that when I went into the ninth grade, my parents, we decided to do homeschooling so that I could actually practice a lot more. And every evening I was in a different rehearsal, a different group in Seattle. And so the homeschool situation allowed me to have a lot more freedom and flexibility to do that. I did eventually go back to the local high school for my senior year because every class I wanted was something that didn't work with homeschool, such as French class, physics class, chemistry class, and three band classes. So that all worked out.
So you were doing some classes and you were doing homeschooling as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And then senior year I went back full time. But it just gave me a lot of extra time to practice. So that was that just sort of sowed the fertile seed, so to speak, of getting to do lots of different music and lots of different genres, classical music, pop music, a lot of jazz as well. So lots of different loves in there. And then I really wanted to go into teaching, so I went to Wheaton, which is a great school in Chicago, apparently, not far from where you grew up, which is exciting. And had a great time out there. Chicago, the Midwest, has a very rich history of music and music education. The school bands there, the place where I student taught, had 300 students in the marching band.
Oh, my.
Just crazy when you look at the size of school districts out here in Northern California compared to what, of course, is out there. It was a very different situation. I love what we're doing here, though, and that's playing music that connects with the whole region, the whole county, and we're talented musicians like the two of you here at the table with me are willing to join together and play great music in a setting like this. So after being in Chicago, I was very interested in teaching, but I just didn't feel that high school and junior high teaching, which I did for several years, was a really great fit for me, and because I still had a love for performance, and I love all of my colleagues who teach full-time in high school and junior high situations, but they tend to not have a lot of time for performance because the teaching situation is so exhausting for them and so time-consuming. So then I pursued going into the idea of becoming a professor, which by the job description is, yes, you're teaching, but you're also required, of course, to continue performing. And so that's what really drew me into playing at a college level and wanting to become a professor. So I went to Cincinnati to do a doctorate after I had taught at Wheaton, returned to Wheaton as an adjunct professor for a couple of years, and then had already at that time done a master's in performance as well. And then 7 years ago, the job opened up here in Reading, and I was very attracted to coming back to the West Coast. Really wanted to get back here and get near some mountains again. And just I love the fact that in Reading we have great musicians and I'm surrounded by mountains and great environment, and so I really feel like this is a perfect location.
Great. Well, we're very fortunate to have you here in the Reading area.
Thank you.
How did you happen to come to Reading and join the faculty?
Well, let's see. When you're a graduate student and finishing up a doctorate, Your last year, you just start getting really anxious about the future, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And so you apply for a million jobs, which I did. And this was one of several that had opened up and had that I interviewed for. And I really, again, just felt like coming to the West Coast is what I wanted to do. It was the right mix for our kind of position for my family and right region for my family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I like Simpson. It's Christian University, but it's also very connected to the region. It's not insular. It's very excited about doing collaborative works like what we do here with the orchestra, where we connect with Shasta College and my Shasta Percussion Workshop, which is an outreach program as well. So it gives me a lot of flexibility to be involved in the community while still teaching at a small liberal arts college, which is what I really like. I think that the liberal arts environment is very transformative, really talks more about, not just about how do you become a great musician or a great biologist or a great chemist or a great literature composer and reader, but also tries to educate the whole person, and I believe that's a really important thing to do.
That's very, very interesting. Now, I understand that Shasta Symphony now draws students from both Simpson and Shasta College,
mm-hmm.
as well as adult musicians from the community.
Mm-hmm.
How did this arrangement happen to take place, and do you feel the arrangement has been beneficial to both the musicians and the concert patrons here in Reading?
Yes, absolutely. This is our third year with the merged environment here, and it has allowed students from both institutions to play in a full-size orchestra with 60 to 70 people,
mm-hmm.
and it means we don't have to have the two schools have any sense, real or imagined, of any sort of competition between our programs. North State is we have a lot of great players here, but obviously it's not a large population in the region.
Mm-hmm.
So with the North State Symphony as the regional professional orchestra, the Shasta Symphony stands as a really strong community and university orchestra, which has a very mm-hmm. different mission. My mission is to make a great experience first and foremost for the students and the players of in the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course we want the audience to love the concert as well, but that's a secondary focus. And so that's very different than a professional orchestra that only really cares about making sure that the audience is happy to sell tickets and the business model there. We have an education model here where the education of our students, whether they're community members or Shasta or Simpson students, that they're still able to keep playing and using their talents in a way that is exciting for them. So the community outreach side is a real benefit. For the students of both schools, it's a huge benefit because they're able to sit next to really talented musicians who have been playing for 20, 30, 40 years,
mm-hmm.
and they are able to glean the experience there and play in this professional level organization. And so they walk away with a really, really positive experience that would be akin to going to a very large university. You'd have to be at a very large school when you could get an orchestra of this caliber that's only students.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're able to give that experience to the North State students while still keeping them in this half of the state here.
That's great. It sounds like it has been a very successful venture,
mm-hmm.
and very interesting to bring a four-year liberal arts university together with a community college.
Mm-hmm. It does. I mean, there are students who come to Shasta College and then transfer over to Simpson and finish a degree there, which is wonderful. At the same time, we have students who at Simpson University who will take a summer class at Shasta. Music faculty, we get along between the two universities. We help each other out. I've come
mm-hmm.
here and taught an
sure.
adjunct class, and they come over. We've done collaborative events, you know, putting the choirs together. Last year when we did the Vaughn Williams Don Novus Pacem, where we
mm-hmm.
combined the two choirs mm-hmm. from both schools. And so, again, I think it's a way that we can, in a small, an area of smaller population, we're not a huge city, so we need to be able to work together and make the best of it, and
mm-hmm.
I think that I know that the administration of both schools and the faculty of both schools really understand that. They've all been extremely supportive. The dean here at Shasta and the provost over at Simpson and the president there have been very, very supportive of this all along, and that's made it real easy.
Well, that's really great because that gives Reading a really fine quality orchestra.
Absolutely.
And I know that the concerts have been well attended. So
yes, absolutely. We sold out the last one.
Been a very successful venture. Well, speaking about the concert,
uh-huh.
Can you tell us something about the concert we're going to hear next Friday? And is there anything in particular our listeners might want to listen for in the concert?
Yeah, it's just going to be a really fabulous show. Even though I said that, of course, my first priority is to make sure that the students have a great time, all of our concerts, I think, are great for the audience as well. This one will feature a wonderful soloist here to my left sitting. He'll talk in a minute. I'm really excited to have him playing for us and be able to do a great Mozart concerto. And that's always a lot of fun to have the students. John has been in the orchestra 4 years? 5 years?
6 years.
6 years?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Many years, both at Simpson when I was doing the Simpson Symphony Orchestra there, also in the Shasta Symphony and the Shasta Youth Symphony. And so to see him, you know, grow up in the orchestra as a musician and then win the competition and have a great time here, that's really exciting. This Bruckner piece we're playing is very different. For, you know, when people think of Bruckner, they think of the 90-minute symphony that, you know, nobody but the most, you know, music sort of snob, if you will, pardon the expression, can actually suffer their way through. And some of his symphonies are wonderful, but some of them are just really long. Well, this is an 8-minute overture that has a lot of his style compressed into one short piece. It's very energetic. It's very exciting. It's one of the last pieces that he wrote as a, quote, student before he launched his professional career as a full-time composer and church organist and the other things that he did. But so this was sort of, it wasn't his final exam, so to speak, but it was at the same time that he was writing his symphony, what he later called Symphony Number Zero, which was his sort of graduation thesis, if you will. And he wrote this at the same time. A lot of similar ideas, but really in this wonderful compressed form. And then, of course, the main feature is this great masterwork, The Pictures at an Exhibition by Mussorgsky, where Mussorgsky was so impacted by the artwork, the death of his friend, that he went and looked at all these art pieces, these wonderful pieces, and was inspired to write the 10 movements with 4 connective promenades, these little walks as you're walking through the gallery. And each one, there's just a huge variety of pieces in here, from really introverted, distant, introspective pieces to very aggressive, grand pieces and some really quirky things that, you know, when the witch comes in movement 9 and these sorts of things that are very eerie and very interesting effects, as well as just adorable things like Ballet of the Unhatched Chicks, which, you know, everybody has to love that one. And so a huge variety. So people out there who might be listening who are afraid to come to a concert, of orchestra concert, because they think, oh, I have to listen to one 45-minute long piece and I can't clap anywhere. This is 14 really short movements all connected into this wonderful 35-minute walk through an art gallery, and there's so much variety. It really honestly was one of the first great pieces that I fell in love with in the classical repertoire in junior high. In fact, in the 80s, I bought, when CDs had just started being produced and mass marketed, I bought this album. It was my second album. 1812 Overture was my first CD I've ever bought when they came out. And then this was the second one. And I was so proud to embark on these Sony CDs here in the early 80s and listen to this one, a recording of the New York Philharmonic playing this probably 100 times. And it was really one of the pieces that made me fall in love with orchestral music as a young musician.
Well, that's really fascinating. Now, I understand that the original Pictures at an Exhibition was written for piano. Is that correct?
It is correct. Mussorgsky pretty much is only known for 2 pieces, this one and Night on a Bald Mountain, which everyone who's seen Fantasia will remember. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this as a piano solo, and Ravel, many people have orchestrated it, but Ravel in early 1920s, I believe, completing it in 1922, wrote this, and it really became his thesis, if you will, his textbook on how to orchestrate, meaning how do you take a note and color it by having different instruments play it. He was asked to actually publish an orchestration textbook, and he was interested in doing it, but he never had time to do it, and his response kind of casually was, well, you know what, my Pictures at an Exhibition is my orchestration textbook, and it's totally true. You could study that. I teach an orchestration class at Simpson, and I suppose I could just throw out my orchestration book and use this instead. I've actually thought about it this semester. There's so many fabulous examples of how he elicits wonderful colors out of every instrument, pairs up instruments in really unique ways, includes instruments we don't hear that much, like the celeste and other mm-hmm. percussion instruments, and the muted brass used very, very well. Overtones and harmonics in the string sections used very well. So there's so many different colors in there. I think it's just a fabulous orchestration.
Sounds like a fascinating piece. And
it is.
I know that the audience is going to absolutely love it. So that's great.
Good.
We're also fortunate to have John Mesh with us. Welcome, John.
Yeah, thank you.
And John, you're going to be performing the Mozart G major violin concerto with the orchestra at the concert. And I'd like to welcome you to Intermountain Classics, John.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. How about if you tell us a little bit about your background, John? How long have you played the violin, and what are your musical plans for the future?
All right. I've played the violin for 12 years now, since I was 5 years old. I think I was first kind of inspired by my older sister, Anna, who played the violin.
Mm-hmm.
And I first heard her playing, and I thought it was kind of interesting. I've never really seen anything like that before. And my first orchestra concert I went to was actually a Shasta Symphony concert, and I was completely blown away. Like, I hadn't seen anything like it before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, I knew that I wanted to start playing music. So I started taking out the violin, and I studied 10 years with my first teacher, and I eventually started studying and taking lessons in Chico from David Mallory, who I'm still currently
uh-huh.
with.
Uh-huh.
And really, like, it's... I don't know. I really just love playing the violin. I'm planning on making a career out of it, hopefully. And
wonderful.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you have plans for a college or a conservatory you want to go to?
Yeah. Ideally, right now, I'm looking at going to University of Michigan.
Oh.
And
wonderful.
There, I know one of the main violin teachers there. I've taken a couple lessons from him. I really liked him, and I'm really looking forward to it. Of course, that's just for my undergraduate work, but I'm planning on doing violin performance for the rest of my undergraduate work. And for my graduate work, I'm planning on going into Suzuki pedagogy, which is, of course, teaching
mm-hmm.
violin
yeah.
to younger
yeah.
students, and opening up my own music school and attempting to open up my own mm-hmm. music school. And that's pretty much it.
And you're getting a little bit of practical experience now. You're working with one of the professors here at Shasta College in his beginning string class this semester.
Yeah, I was really excited. He invited me to start teaching with him in his strings class and
mm-hmm.
take some of his groups of students out, and I teach them separately
yeah.
from
mm-hmm.
him, and we do a lot of back and forth work with each other. So
yeah, that's really great experience.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
You have a very bright future in front of you.
Thank you.
It's very exciting. Well, I'm sure you're very excited about performing as a soloist with the Shasta Symphony. How long did it take you to prepare the Mozart concerto for this performance, and how did you happen to have been chosen to be a soloist for the concert?
I have probably been working on that. This is actually the first piece I started studying with David Mallory when I first started studying with
mm-hmm.
him. I played it for a couple months with him, played it, and kind of forgot about it for a while. And I came back to this piece because I feel like Mozart's actually really underplayed by a lot of people. Like, people use a lot of Mozart concertos, Mozart sonatas to learn and kind of get the stylistic period down, and then they kind of just forget about him and start working
mm-hmm.
on other composers.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like people don't really come back to Mozart enough. And I, personally, he's one of my favorite composers, and I absolutely love his G major concerto. So I decided to start working on it a few months ago again, bring it back up to where it previously had been. And I was doing a couple competitions, and one of the competitions was for Soloing of the Symphony, and
mm-hmm.
he won the competition, so that brings me right where we are right now.
So you were awarded the solo position as the result of a competition?
Right.
And that's something that you sponsored, Dr.
Yeah,
Farmer?
We have an annual competition we do for a vocalist, and we have instrumentalist. The vocalist we open up to students at Shasta or Simpson University. They have
mm-hmm.
to just be an enrolled student and taking voice lessons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's great. Our April concert will feature the winner of that. And then we have an instrumental competition from the students within the orchestra. They need to be playing, unless they're a pianist, they need to be playing in the orchestra. And so we have that every year.
Oh, yeah. Very good. And so John was the winner of, mm-hmm. of that competition this year. Well, congratulations to you for
thank
that.
Thank you.
All right. Well, all of us here at KKRN and Intermountain Classics want to wish you, John, and Dr. Corbin mm-hmm. a wonderful concert.
Thank you.
And is there anything else either of you would like to add for our listeners?
Just go online to Shasta College website, music department, and purchase tickets in advance there. And you get to skip the line. Just go right up to the will call, grab your tickets. And mm-hmm. love for you to get tickets in advance. And,
okay.
Come to the show.
Very good.
It's
Very
a Friday good. Night concert, so that's a new thing for us. So Friday night, March 1st, mm-hmm. we'll see you there.
Yes. So once again, the Shasta Symphony Concert is performing its winter concert next Friday, March 1st at 7:30 p.m. Featured in the concert will be Pictures at an Exhibition by Mussorgsky, the Overture in G Minor by Bruckner, and the Mozart G Major Violin Concerto featuring student violinist John Mesh. The concert takes place at the Shasta College Theater. Tickets are available online at shastacollege.edu or at the door.
This is Intermountain Classics on KKRN 88.5 FM in Round Mountain. I'm Tom Diskin. Thanks for listening. We have just heard an interview with the conductor and musical director of the Shasta Symphony Orchestra, Dr. Dwayne Corbin, and student soloist John Mesh, who will be featured in the concert as violin soloist in the Mozart G Major Violin Concerto. The concert will take place at the Shasta College Theater this coming Friday, March 1st, at 7 p.m. Pictures at an Exhibition is a suite in 10 movements composed for piano by Russian composer Modest Mussorgsky in 1874. It has become known through various orchestrations and arrangements produced by other musicians and composers, with Ravel's arrangement being the most recorded and performed. Pictures at an Exhibition is a stroll through an art gallery depicting the following scenes: the gnome, the old castle, Tuileries, the ox cart, ballet of the chicks in their shells, Samuel Goldenberg and Shmuel, the marketplace, the catacombs, with the dead in a dead language, the hut on chicken legs, and finally, the Great Gate of Kiev. This performance of Pictures at an Exhibition features Bay Area-based Redwood Symphony, conducted by Eric Kujewski.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
This is Intermountain Classics on KKRN 88.5 FM in Round Mountain. I'm Tom Diskin. Thanks for joining me this evening. We have just heard the Redwood Symphony, conducted by Eric Kujewski in Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition. Stay tuned for more music on Intermountain Classics. The second hour of our program features a symphony by Gounod and a divertimento by Brazilian composer Edino Krieger. And remember, you can find more detailed program notes on all the works on tonight's program by consulting the Intermountain Classics section of the KKRN.org website.